It varies depending on the position they play. But the average is around about 12 to 13 kilometres. That's obviously spread across four quarters of 20 minutes plus stoppage time. So it's about 105 minutes or so. It can be down as low as 6-7 kilometres for some of the fixed positions and up as high as even 17-18 kilometres in a game.
So are the best teams the ones that necessarily run the most?
Well, it would potentially come across to a spectator that a team that's seemingly all over the park and running fast, able to get to the ball quickly, it would seem that they would dominate the game. But typically what you might see is a more experienced team or the more experienced players actually covering less distance and doing things smarter rather than doing things faster. So the notion of experience and playing smarter can trump or can win out over out-and-out physical prowess. That's not to say you can just not bother training physical prowess. There needs to be a minimum level of physical capacity to play team sport at the highest levels. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to run the fastest to win the game.
Wouldn't the experienced players also be the older players and therefore they don't have as much energy to, say, run around the field as the younger players?
Yeah, obviously, yeah, with experience or with age comes experience or, and vice versa. There are cases of some pretty good physical specimens of older people, but, yeah, I guess in general you might see the overall physical capacity is somewhat reduced in the older players. But to the point where some of the younger players, and when we're talking about the first and second year players, just because they're 18 or 19, that doesn't mean that they are in the peak of physical condition. It could well be that the 3 to 6 year players, so you're talking the 21 to 26 year olds, potentially they would form the benchmark in terms of the physical capacities.
So what's the difference in performance for high-calibre and low-calibre players?
So from the research that we've been conducting, the coaches give a rating for how well they think the player performed in that game. And that is based on their position-specific requirements. So were they required to tag a player? Were they required to be on do something in the forward pocket, something specific like that? So how well did the player undertake their role? And then it's a score that's rated out of 20. And then we can look at dividing those. What we did in this research was divide them into the high-caliber players and the low-caliber players. So we were able to get a feel for players who were performing their task. What did they do in terms of their movement demands? And those that didn't do so well, what did they do or what didn't they do? And so by dividing them into not just in half, we didn't just say that the top half were the highs. We divided them into smaller groups and just took the upper percentiles and the lower percentiles. And we're able to get a good feel for the differences in running from those particular positions. And once again, it seemed like the higher caliber players didn't do the bulk of the physical work, that they're actually, once again, that the experienced players, so they're tactically superior and potentially technically more proficient as well.
Because AFL involves more than just running. You've got to be able to kick, you've got to be able to throw, you've got to be able to tackle. So, yeah, I can see why conserving energy would be necessary to do all that. But are we focusing too much on running and ignoring the other skills in the game?
Throughout a weekly training program, there is a lot of time devoted to the skill components. And certainly there's a benchmark level to reach AFL standard, to make it through the draft camp and to be drafted. There's a minimum standard that all players can perform these tasks proficiently. But then it's being able to perform those tasks under conditions of fatigue and to perform sprints under repeated conditions and whilst executing these technical capabilities with precision, that is of utmost importance in the game. And when it comes late in the fourth quarter, when you've been playing for 95 minutes already, something like that, you need to be able to have the physical capacity to perform those tasks to the perfect precision and perfect output. So training by boosting physical capacity and understanding the demands of a game, then you're able to specifically contrive either match scenarios to practice in the training pitch, or we're building capacity to have the players have the ability to perform those tasks with precision at the end of a game when it's needed.
You said that the average punter probably looks to see if their team is running a lot as an indicator of whether they're doing well. But and as you've said, that's not necessarily the case. But do coaches understand the link between running and performance?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. The coaches are the absolute gold standard of judging performance in matches. And we would, as exercise scientists, we would never question the role of the coach in being able to make a judgment on players. And I think it would be naive of us to think that we know more about the physical and the demands of the game than a coach. So I'm very confident that coaching staff are able to distinguish between the technical, the tactical, and the physical side of things. And they know when someone might be running around without that technical involvement. They're well aware of that.